evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, August 17, 2016. On this one-year anniversary of the peace deal, one analyst says the new first vice president could help unite opposition and government forces.
These types of processes can begin, then they can reduce conflict in some of these areas, particularly some of the more remote areas where civilians are in much worse situation than they are in the capital.
And South Sudan's first vice president tells journalists in Nairobi that the peace deal is working and Riek Machar should denounce violence.
If Riek come and he conditioned that for country to have peace, that he must return back to the palace, to J1. We shall discuss that, including that Riek, if you go back to your office, this time you don't need a huge army to move with you. This time you need to listen to the voice of the people, that people of South Sudan do not need crisis any longer.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Experts are revisiting the impact of South Sudan's peace deal a year after it was signed by the two warring parties in the Ethiopian capital, Addis Ababa. A humanitarian crisis has largely crippled the country, coupled with widespread food insecurity, which was triggered by fighting and worsening economic crisis. Despite South Sudan's grim state of affairs today, one expert at the International Crisis Group says the August peace deal, which was aimed at ending the fighting and guiding South Sudan into a new era of peace and stability, can still be used as a mechanism to provide justice for victims of South Sudan's conflict and pave way for economic recovery. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
A year ago today, the parties of South Sudan's warring sides met in Addis to begin a year-long process of forming a transitional government of national unity, a hybrid court to administer justice to the victims of the conflict, and all other matters stipulated in the peace deal. But renewed fighting in Juba last month raised questions on whether or not the peace deal should be considered a binding agreement to guide the country. Casey Copeland, a Nairobi-based senior analyst at an NGO called the International Crisis Group, says the peace deal did not address some of the specific issues that led to the resumption of violence in the capital.
It's a very large document, 80 pages long, and it includes a lot of things that people consider to be causes of the conflict. It has a hybrid tribunal and a compensation court that will address some of the atrocities that led to the beginning of the war. It had various provisions for sort of improved fiscal management. It was going to promulgate a new constitution, look at issues of federalism, which many people wanted to see part of the sort of governance model in South Sudan.
The security arrangements that led to the arrival of former First Vice President Riek Machar and his forces in April are not stipulated in the peace agreement and was the source of disagreements between the two sides for weeks. But Copeland says those were separate negotiations. There was hope that Machar's reappointment would lead to a permanent ceasefire, but reports of violence persisted across the country, and political instability continues to threaten the viability of the peace deal. After fighting broke out in July and Machar went into hiding, he was replaced by his former peace deal negotiator, Taban Dengai. Senior members of the SPLM in opposition have since said that Deng's appointment by President Salva Kiir violates the August peace deal. Deng says he will work to unite opposition and government forces, a move that Copeland believes could be promising for the security of the country.
We have a peace agreement that's now looks like it will be partially implemented. But one of the things that the government has stated its intention to implement is integration of armed groups. Now, if these types of processes can begin, then they can reduce conflict in some of these areas, particularly some of the more remote areas where civilians are in much worse situation than they are in the capital.
Copeland says if South Sudan's economic crisis is not resolved, it could lead to greater levels of suffering on both government and opposition-controlled areas. She says one problem is that the widespread government corruption that created the economic crisis was never addressed in the peace deal.
What is the problem is that we saw a host of sort of mismanagement issues and corruption issues that that could be sustained when oil prices were very high, when there was a lot of money to go around. But as money became much tighter. We started to see, in addition to expenditures on the war and costs for fighting a war, that the cost of corruption became untenable. So we saw the central bank running out of money. We saw the failure to sort of rein in some of these practices that were benefiting the few at the cost of the many. And this issue is not addressed in the peace agreement.
Nor is it addressed in the UN resolution on South Sudan, which Copeland says leaves it to the government of South Sudan to try to pull itself back from its economic precipice. For VOA News, I'm Ayan Bior in Washington.
South Sudan's first vice president, Taban Dengai, met with reporters in Nairobi today and reiterated his government's commitment to peace. He says his predecessor, Riek Machar, should denounce violence and form a political party and wait for 2018 elections. From Nairobi, VOA's Jill Craig has more.
During his meeting with reporters, South Sudan's new first vice president, Taban Dengai, urged members of the press several times to be truthful in reporting on his country, saying they were spreading misinformation about fighting around Juba.
This is not true. The country is in peace. It is quiet in the whole region of Upper Nile. There's no fighting in the whole areas of Upper Nile, where I come from. The crisis that had happened in Wau are arrested, addressed. There's peace in Wau now. No fighting at all around Juba. If there are any skirmishes, it should be somewhere west of the country, in the borders of DRC, especially the areas of Western Equatorial region.
A tenuous ceasefire has been holding in Juba since the July violence, but there have been sporadic reports of continued fighting around the Equatoria region and former Western Bahar al-Ghazal state by Kiir and Machar's opposing forces. In line with the refrain that his country is peaceful and quiet, Deng announced that his government has prioritized combining the forces of President Salva Kiir and former First Vice President Riek Machar, with the goal of having one fully unified army by May 2017.
Parallel armies is what brought crisis last month. That led to the killing in Juba, and that led to the former First Vice President moving away from Juba.
And when that former First Vice President Riek Machar left Juba, Deng was installed in his place, a move that some opposition members rejected as illegal. Deng says his appointment is in line with the terms of the peace agreement. Deng suggested that Machar, wherever he is, should ask for peaceful passage to a location of his choice in either South Sudan or another African country, where he should organize his political party and wait for the 2018 elections. But Deng was unclear about what he would do if Machar turned up, looking for his old job back.
My comrades in the SPLM in opposition decided to put me in the position. I gladly accepted this. I'm also telling you, if my stepping down can bring peace to South Sudan, I'm ready when time comes. But what I'm doing now is that I'm not delaying implementation of peace, waiting for anybody.
Deng said he was not aware of recent allegations of violence targeting American aid workers, as well as the murder of a local journalist at a hotel compound in Juba in July.
I've not come across a report of alleging rape against foreign aid workers, but I know there's a lot of allegations of South Sudanese women and girls went through rapes. What we have done, the government have formed committees to do the investigation. And for your information also, the army have constituted a court-martial body because these are the claims against rapes and human rights violations are serious issues. And in Wau, a number of soldiers have already been punished. A capital punishment was applied. And unfortunately, this was not reflected in the press.
When asked why it took many hours for South Sudanese security forces to respond to calls for help from those inside the compound, according to witnesses, Deng said delays are inevitable, no matter where you are.
No, you know what is important, madam? You know, even in the United States, you come from the United States or from where? Okay. Even in your country, the police and army come late. It is not automatic. Huh?
Deng also urged regional bloc IGAD to have technical staff visit Juba and work with his government on the specifics of bringing in the recently approved 4,000-member regional protection force. Jill Craig, VOA News, Nairobi.
Sudan's Foreign Affairs Ministry is denying the government arrested and detained 15 Darfur internal displaced persons after the people met with the United States Special Envoy to Sudan in South Sudan, Donald Booth, last month. Booth spent 3 days in North and Central Darfur, where he met with IDPs at their camps. Nabil Biagio has the details for VOA from Khartoum.
Activists in Darfur reported several cases of arbitrary detentions of IDPs at Nertiti camps in central Darfur just days after the U.S. Special Envoy met with internally displaced persons in Darfur. The United States government issued a statement last week expressing its concern about the reported detentions and called on the government of Sudan to immediately release all detainees. Saleh Mahmoud is a Sudanese human rights lawyer and member of the Darfur Bar Association. His association sent a petition signed by more than 100 Sudanese lawyers to the Khartoum government last week, asking it to immediately release the detainees. Mahmoud says authorities were worried about what the IDPs might have said to Booth about their living conditions at camp and the security situation in Darfur, which Mahmoud describes as terrible.
Detentions and arrests were direct consequences of the meeting that took place between the detainees and the special envoy, U.S. envoy to Sudan, Mr. Donald Booth.
Sudanese government spokesperson Ahmed Bilal denies the government arrested any IDPs in Darfur in connection with Booth's visit.
Nobody is detained. Nobody. I went through and we asked the local authorities, national security. They said they didn't detain anybody.
Bilal insists that Booth's visit ended smoothly and it was, in fact, facilitated by the government.
It was a very successful visit. No war. People are peaceful. Everything is going through normally. We have now good rains in this season. And people are very busy with their farms.
Mahmoud says the government's denial comes because the government has no legal basis to justify detaining IDPs.
As a lawyer, and we in the Darfur Bar Association, we don't at all even have any idea how can the government claim charges against these people. The detention in itself is illegal.
Booth met with government officials, civil society activists, and internally displaced persons during his three-day visit to Darfur that began on July 26th. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Khartoum.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the leader of the former SPLM detainees speaks about why the peace agreement collapsed. That story is coming up next.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you do to help your community?
What I do to help my community is just to teach my young brothers and sisters in the same community as me. And again, I participate in different activities which can improve on people's lives in my community. I think that's all.
When there is a community walk, I go out and participate. We clean the gutters and clear the bushes around.
So I do give psychosocial support to my people in the community, especially those who have some disability. So I do, I'm just a psychosocial support giver.
I just participate in those public works like umuganda and those entertaining activities. Since I know how to speak Chinese, I help my community members to study Chinese.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The leader of the SPLM former detainees, who is also a signatory to the South Sudan August peace deal, says the one-year-old peace deal needs intervention from the international community to chart a new approach to save the country from sliding back to war. Pagana Moon says the stakeholders to the peace agreement have been forced to leave the country because of instability. He says the Kiir administration should not be trusted to implement the peace agreement.
The peace agreement, unfortunately, has been destroyed by President Kiir with the way he attacked and used the military, very heavy military force, to push out Dr. Riek Machar, the first vice president. He is the first vice president, and there is no way that that they can say that the peace agreement is alive and they are implementing it. It is not being implemented. The whole world is calling on them to return to the peace process, calling on President Kiir and Dr. Riek Machar and all the stakeholders to return implementation of the agreement. It has actually not been implemented in the first place. But the first attempts from April, that they started very late because of the obstructions that the SPLM and government as a party have placed, have not actually moved any step. All areas of the implementation have been obstructed by President Kiir. And this has been the resolution of the IGAD countries, whom were the mediators. And that is, again, the view of the African Union. And the Security Council just passed a resolution to that considered the situation in South Sudan as a threat to international peace and security.
Mr. Pagan, in a situation where the, let me say, the stakeholders to the peace agreement are not in the country, for instance, you are in the United States, Riek Machar is nowhere to be found, Lamar Col left the country, should the South Sudanese people wait for you to come back so that the agreement is implemented?
What is keeping these people out is clear to you and is known that Kiir and the SPLM and government are warmongers, and they have created a big insecurity in the whole country, including the capital. And this government is endangering the lives of the people of South Sudan. We have hundreds of thousands who are being protected by UN, even who are being attacked in these civilian protected protection camps. And the UN even has been suffering a lot of casualty because of this. Our people are, our women are being raped, very heavy sexual violence against our women. People are being killed in town, most of the time on ethnic basis, and which has forced the whole world to intervene to protect the people from the very government that claim to be governing them. This is the reason why all these people are outside of Juba. There is no political space at all for implementing the peace agreement.
And some people who are not South Sudanese are wondering that how come you, the same people who are now in South Sudan, were able to implement the comprehensive peace agreement that brought peace to Sudan, and now that you're not able to implement an agreement that was signed 1 year ago. What is the difference between the CPA and the agreement that was signed in Addis last year?
A big difference. The parties to the CPA, the National Congress government, and the SPLM signed the agreement, and no party signed with reservations. The parties of the agreement committed themselves to implement the agreement. But in our case, when President Kiir signed on the 22nd, of August, he said very clearly that this agreement is not a Quran nor a Bible, and that he will not implement it. And he was referring to the statement of President late Jafar Mohamed Nimeiri of Sudan when he dishonored and violated the Addis Ababa agreement. So Here we are in a situation where one party, which is holding the seat of government in Juba, is not for peace, is against peace, and has made this position very clear to everybody.
That's Pagan Amum, leader of the former SPLM detainees. Amum has formed a new advocacy group known as South Sudan Reborn last month. He says the group is mobilizing friends of South Sudan around the world to save the country from collapsing. Back to South Sudan now, where the government of the newly created Tonj state says flooding and communal clashes have impeded educating children in the state. They also say low salaries have forced some teachers to seek better pay with non-governmental organizations and security services. Santo Monut has more for VOA from Tonj.
Tonj State Minister of Education, Gender and Social Welfare Autabisa Anyar says education in Tonj faces many challenges, but she advises citizens to be patient. She says parents and all other stakeholders should work together to combat the impediments to learning.
Some schools are closed down because of flood. There are a lot of water, whereby children cannot access to those schools.
Intercommunal clashes have also severely impacted teaching in schools in remote areas where instability is the order of the day. I would say a number of schools are not operating because of that.
In Tonj East, we have schools in the borders, like those of Lulis, they are not working. Some schools in Tonj North, especially Maria Law, there are some schools not operating currently because of clashes which happened between Lonpagar and Napung Padoch.
Clashes in former Tonj North County have claimed the lives of more than 100 people, some of whom are women and children murdered during night raids. After splitting the Tonj into 19 counties and appointing new commissioners, Tonj State Governor Akeng Tong Aleo ordered the commissioners to prioritize security of Dai people. During an oath-taking ceremony, Akej appealed to the new commissioners to work for peace and stability in all counties.
Now, with 19 commissioners, with the cadres of the movement who fought for 22 years, your people are still dying. What are you going to do? And when? Now it is the time for you to go and help your people. To stop this conflict, let the people remain in peace, harmony, and reconcile them. If you do that, then automatically you are a winner in your county.
Civil servants say grade 14 teachers received about 300 South Sudanese pounds per month. Today, that amount is not enough to pay for one meal per day for a typical family. Because of that, many teachers have left teaching for better pay in the NGO world. I would appeal to the community to support teachers.
We are supposed to support our teachers, telling them that if there is no any top-up, we are supposed to leave aside and continue teaching until we will get what we were hoping for.
Tonj State was created from former Warab State, where ethnic clashes paralyzed activities for many years, prompting President Kiir to fire former Warab State Governor Nyandeng Malek Delesh. For BOA News, Amayuel Santino Manut in Tonj.
From Tonj, we move to Imatong State, where officials say a pilot farm opened 2 months ago will soon supply hundreds of metric tons of food to local markets and other parts of South Sudan. The project has employed dozens of locals and hundreds of hectares of land have been cleared for agriculture. Dimo Silva Aurelio has more for VOA from Torit.
Sorghum, maize, carrots, cabbages, and other crops and vegetables will soon be harvested at the 86-hectare Green Horizon Farm in Bur Payam, 6 kilometers north of the state capital Torit. National Agriculture Ministry officials from Juba visited the farm last week and said the government project, supported by an Israeli-based company, aimed at ending food insecurity across the country. Speaking in Arabic, Cornelio Kun Mu, South Sudan's Deputy Agriculture Minister, says his ministry is supporting farmers to produce more food to feed the hungry population in South Sudan.
I have come to Omotong and will be going to Rang, Bor, Wau and Awil. At the moment in Rang, we have 500,000 to 600,000 fedans of sorghum and simsim. In our program in the Ministry of Agriculture, we are targeting 1 million fedans of food crops in South Sudan.
State officials say hundreds of residents fled the area to escape food shortages caused by a recent drought. The Green Horizon project gives them hope that soon the area will produce enough food to supply local and regional markets. State Agriculture Minister Gaetano Victor Agalic says he expects farm workers to begin harvesting the crops in October.
If what is planted in the field, if they really perform very well, which means the state is going to be food secure. With the short dry spell, which we have seen today from the farm, this is what is making us a little bit worried. But if it's going to rain from today or tomorrow onward, then by the end of October, definitely we are going to have harvest, the first harvest of the carrot, the onion, and the cabbages, the horticultural crops.
The Israeli-based global group says they are planning to employ hundreds of locals at the farm and improve the capacity of local farmers. Global Group Managing Director Ofer Zuns says dozens of young people have already taken up jobs, including planting and weeding.
One aspect that is very, very important for us is a cooperation with the community, with the local people. As you saw in the field, all the seasonal work, like the weeding or harvesting or planting, will be done and done by the local community people, which are by the numbers, some of them can be 20 a day, some 50, some 70 a day, depends on the requirement. And then we are looking at harvest season to check the logistic channels, how to bring the goods to Juba, main market, or even distribute in the counties here in Imatong.
Zooms says workers will establish an irrigation system by November for the second season, which could involve more advanced mechanized agriculture equipment.
The project actually lies on four pillars. The first one is the cultivation, as you saw. The second one is sharing with the communities on what we call CCF, community commercial farming, where the communities can purchase inputs, cultivate their own plots, and then all the market and all the logistics are handled by us. Third is the training. We're going to train people in agriculture activities, mechanics, electrician.
The farm project also employs former soldiers to help reintegrate the men into their communities. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
That's the end of our show for this Wednesday, and we end the show with the song Heart Attack by Radio and Whistle. Hossa, hossa. We have been listening to Radio and Whistle with the song Heart Attack. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thank you for allowing us into your homes and vehicles. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Darling, you're my world to be. Without you, girl, I don't have to live.